Ecclesiastes 12. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain, when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the window grow dim, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, when people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire is no longer stirred, then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about the streets. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil.
Thanks, Ed. Well, good evening, everyone, and particularly here, if you're new here for the very first time, my name's Ying, and I'm one of the English pastors, along with Dan and Winston, who you might not get to meet today, but if you come along in the future weeks, you'll certainly get to meet them. Well, Christmas is over. Actually, let me just make sure my technology is running okay. I have a backup system here, because let's make sure we're going okay. Technology is great at best of times, worst at the worst times. Our camera has died, so we had to go with this makeshift camera. And yesterday, if you were here, it was Christmas Day. 10 minutes before the service beginning, the technology died on us. Anyway, that's how it goes. Well, Christmas is over now. I hope you had a great Christmas meal with your family. But with Christmas being over now, the silly season is over. It's now what I would just dub the lazy season. And it's lazy because this is the time when most people go on holidays. And when I mean by holidays, yes, they go on holidays, but even if you're not going on holidays, this is a time when work slows down in the big time. I remember when I was in tax office, this was the best time. I wouldn't take annual leave, I didn't need to, because everything was just slow at work. Come into a office at 7:30, I just go read the newspaper, play some games with all the colleagues around 12. We might pick up the phone because there's nothing going on at work. That's why it was the best time of the year. Everything was so chilled out. But it's amazing now at the end of 2021 how crazy the last 2 years have been and how quickly it has all gone. But being the last Sunday of the year, it's only appropriate then that, and traditionally, it's time to look back over the year, assess how the year has been, to reflect on it, and to set our bearings for next year, which is why I decided, let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Because Ecclesiastes is about a guy, Solomon, who went on a long, lifelong journey just to explore what life was really like. And after he's done his journey, he looks back on his journey and he draws some conclusion. And a similar thought, I think it might be appropriate for us, because we've been on a two-year journey, so to speak, of a very messy and mixed up world. And so it's worthwhile, therefore, to look back and see what life was like back in 2021, including 2022. So I think, and I think that what Solomon has to say is certainly very relevant for us today. But before we look at Ecclesiastes 12, it might be good to understand something on the context of Ecclesiastes. Something in the context of Ecclesiastes. Now, it actually said that Ecclesiastes belongs in a category of books known as the wisdom literature. There in the Bible, there are all sorts of different types of books. There are the Gospels, the well-known Gospels. There are Paul's letters. There are historical narratives like the Book of Acts and like the Book of Kings and Chronicles and Judges and so on and so forth. There are the prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, Habakkuk. We touched on that just briefly. But there's also a category of books known as wisdom literature. And the wisdom literature is essentially made up of three books, right? Proverbs, Job, and Ecclesiastes. And what's important about the book of these wisdom literature is really that tells us how the world actually runs. You see, all the other books tends to give us a picture of what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. You could say that they deal with the black and white areas of life. But when you look at life, there's a lot of gray zone, a lot of messy stuff, a lot of confusing stuff. And you always wonder, how do you navigate through that? This is where the book of the wisdom literatures come into their own. They really are helping us to navigate through the messiness and the confusion of this world. So let me give you an example of how this works, all right? Being Asian, we love what? Mathematics. So I decided to try and put this into mathematical language, all right? Let's see how it works, all right? I'm sure let's see how it goes. If you want to think of Proverbs, what's Proverbs like? Well, Proverbs is like 1 + 1. What would the equation be? 1 + 1 = what? Any math genius here? You want to give it a go? 1 + 1 = what? What? Are you guys what? Scared? Yeah. Oh, Justin. Justin says 2. Anyone agree with that? Yeah. Okay. Ed says 2. Okay. You're right. It is 2. Good on you. Good on you, Justin. Right, let's go for the next one. What about Job? 1 + 1 = what, according to Job? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Any engineers here? Oh, Christine, you're an engineer, aren't you? Was it? 2, wrong. It's 3. According to Job, 1 + 1 = 3. You think to yourself, oh, that's wrong. Absolutely wrong, but that's the point of Job. See, when you read Proverbs tells us there's a certain order, predictability about life. If you do the right thing, you get the right outcome. If you do the wrong thing, you get actually punished whatsoever. If you work hard, you get rewarded. If you're lazy, you get the consequences for being lazy. That's the book of Proverbs. But then when you come across Job and we look at life, it's never so simple. Because the reality is that in Job, he tells us that life actually works in the opposite sense. A lot of times people do the right thing, but they actually get wrong outcomes. A lot of times people work hard, but they lose it all. But on the other hand, what you see are people who do the wrong thing and they seem to get away with murder. The wicked seem to be blessed. The righteous seem to be cursed. And so what you see is that when Proverbs, you need both Proverbs and Job, Proverbs brings one aspect, Job highlights that life is never as simple as Proverbs. It's more complicated than that. What about Ecclesiastes? According to Ecclesiastes, yes, One. Well, you're wrong. Because according to Ecclesiastes, it's a question mark. Because remember what the reading was, meaningless, meaningless. All is meaningless. That is to say, there are times when the things seem to work according to plan. There are times when it seems to work against the plan and against the order. But many times, there's just a lot of confusion and a lot of mess in it. And you don't know what to make of it. And so it's important if you want to actually navigate through this crazy, confusing, messed up world, you actually need to read the three books together. Because what they together highlight are different aspects of the world. Well, today what I want to look at are four key points that come out of the last two verses of this passage. And there are the four points that I want to highlight, right? Life is messy and there are no guarantees. The most important thing in life is to fear God and keep his commands. Thirdly, to fear God and keep his commands is the whole duty of man. Fourthly, what God calls us to do is what God is doing in us. Well, let's zero in on the first one. Let's start with the first one. Life is messy and there are no guarantees. Have a look at how this passage begins here in verse 13. And look at what it says here in the opening line. Now, all has been heard. All has been heard. You see, Solomon has gone on a crazy worldwide sightseeing tour. He's gone to all the different places, the nooks and the crannies of life. He's visited the high times of life and the low times of life. He's gone into people's valleys, into homes and to people's workplaces. He's gone into the dark valleys, he's gone to the main streets. He's watched, he's observed, he's listened very, very attentively. He did not spare his eyes from seeing anything. Why? Because he truly wanted to work out what life is all about. Now, contrast that with us. Contrast that with us. We often know that readily describe our society as a consumerist society. It's all about how much you have. That is the equation for life. And one can think of the Boxing Day sale, although this year the Boxing Day sales are down. But nevertheless, straight after Christmas, everyone's just barraging in, shoving and pushing to get the latest sales. But there's one other side of our consumerist society, which in some sense sort of is offshoot of it, that we often forget. And that is our world is what is known as an entertainment world. That is to say, life for many of us is defined as a big party. It's always about fun. It's always about enjoying ourselves. It's always about the next high, seeking the next adventure. You see, the greatest sin in our entertainment world is what? You know what the greatest sin in this entertainment world? It's boredom. That's what it is. So everything is actually constructed to make you feel good, to give you the excitement and the adventure and so on and so forth. And we're always chasing around for that next thing. But here's the problem. When you come face to face with reality, it is never so simple. Reality has a much darker side to life than we often like to recognize. And so what happens when we come face to face with the dark side of reality? If we're born up with this sort of thinking that life is all about happiness and feel good, well, what do I do with that sort of thing? You know what we do? We go run, hide, and get ourselves into drugs. Why? Because we want to make ourselves feel good. We go into drinking and alcohol. Why? Because we want to make ourselves feel good. For some people, they'll go into porn because it makes them feel good. Hides them away from the problem. Gives them an escapism. But maybe you're not into all that sort of stuff. But nevertheless, we have our ways of escaping reality. We lock ourselves into gated suburbs where we keep the riffraff out of our community. We keep the dark side, all the drugs and the bad stuff out of the community because we want a good life. We want to actually feel good about life. The reality is, the long and short is that we like to bury our head in the sand. We want to see certain things, but we filter out other things. But when you come to Solomon, he was not like that. Solomon had the guts to face life square in the face, to see all things, to hear all things, and to observe. And that's why he says, now all has been heard. All has been heard. He wants to see what life is really like in all its technicolor scheme. And from this, he thus draws a conclusion, which you see there in verse 13. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. And what does he conclude? What does it include? That the future is never certain and that there are no guarantees despite what we like to think. That the future is never certain and that there are no guarantees. Have a look at what he says in chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. Chapter 9, 1 and 2. Notice what he says there in verse 1. So I reflected on all this and concluded. Again, here is a guy in the middle of the journey. He's done lots of research, just watching and observing. And he's reflecting on this and concluded. And what does he conclude? Well, firstly this, that the righteous and the wise, he's talking about God-fearing people, talking about people like you and me, people who love God, who desire to serve God. He's talking about such people. And what does he also conclude? Well, they're in God's hands. That stands to reason. If you belong to God, you are safe and secure in God's hands. We're often told that the safest place to be in the universe is in the very hand of God. And this is what he's concluded. We are in the hand of God. But here's the thing that he's also come to recognize. No one knows whether love or hate awaits them. What's he actually saying here? Even though you are safe in the hand of God, God never guarantees that the future is filled with sunny days, with healthy bodies and good relationships. The future is never certain about love. There may be suddenly hatred. It's not just bright days that light in the future, but black days, stormy days. Not just healthy bodies, but broken bodies. Not just healthy relationships, but broken relationships. And that is even speaking here about those people belong to God. As he said this, I reflect on all this and conclude that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. So in other words, what's he saying? You can pray all you like, which is good. The Bible calls us to pray. You can plan all you like, which is what the book of Proverbs tells us, plan. You can seek all the endless counsels you like, which is what, again, the book of Rob tells us to do. But the future is still uncertain, and there are no guarantees. Absolutely not. I remember many years ago speaking to a pastor friend in Singapore. And he was contemplating about going over to the United States to do some postgraduate studies. So he did what was right. He spent much time in prayer, seeking God's leading. He spent a lot of time speaking to his wife. He spent a lot of time speaking to church friends. Is this the thing that I should do? And after much soul-searching prayer and discussion, he found a peace within himself and decided, yes, that's what I should do. And so he packed up and left for about a six-month, planned for a six-month trip to the States to do some postgraduate study. Not long after he landed in the States, he contracted a very rare but deadly disease. He almost died. He was hospitalized for months on end. And the question is, what happened? He prayed. He discussed it with his wife. He sought counsel from friends. He had a peace of mind and he went. And this happened? Where did it go wrong? Had he misread the leading, God's leading? Was he sort of filtering out what other people say? Maybe, maybe not. But I take it that he did nothing wrong. I think if you read Ecclesiastes 9, that what happened to him is simply that is what life is like. Remember what Ecclesiastes says, the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hands of God, but no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. And that is true for each and every one of us. We can pray and plan and discuss and do all sorts of preparation to ensure that things work according to plan. But no, the future is still uncertain and there are no guarantees. Why is that? Because the one thing that Solomon has discovered is that life is messy and there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees. That leads me to my second point. That the most important thing in life is to fear God and keep his commands. Listen to what Solomon says in verse 13 again. Now, all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commands. Two simple things that he's recognized. After doing all his research, he's come to realize that two things that stand out above all else is to fear God and keep his command. Well, what does it mean to fear God? The first question. When we talk about fearing God, our natural sort of idea is to fear God means to be afraid of God. In other words, we are to live in fear of him, to live in a state of constant terror before God. And when you think about it, if that's the case, that's very unhealthy, isn't it? Because living in a state of constant terror is always not good for our mental well-being nor physical. So it's not surprising that when people capture this idea, it means it's something that we need to avoid and run away from. Don't talk about fearing God. Just focus on God's love and kindness and blah, blah, blah. But the whole idea of fearing God is just absolute nonsense. But here's the problem. The problem is that the Bible presents the fear of God not in a negative way, but in a very, very positive way. Very, very positive way. Have a look what it says in Proverbs 14. The fear of the Lord is what? A fountain of life. You want to enjoy the good life? The fear of the Lord is the key to a good life. Or verse 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life, then one rests content, untouched by trouble. And interesting, you want to find the source of contentment in your life? Learn to fear God. So it begs the question, what do we mean by the fear of God? And I want to say fearing God is not so much about being afraid of God, but fearing God is about standing in awe of God. Fearing God means treating God as he deserves. See, a lot of people believe in God. The problem is not whether people believe God, nor whether the problem is whether people worship God. They do not worship him in a way that he deserves to be worshipped. Let me give an example. Consider this situation of a four-star general. You have been drafted into the United States Army. And you heard the stories about this four-star general, loved by all his men. He's a four-star general who loves his men, who would die for his men. He's a four-star general who go out of his way to make sure his men are cared for, which is why they all love him to boot. And you see the four-star general walking by, and then you just race up and you put your arms around him, say, "G'day, how's it going? I think you're the best," and something like that. And say, "Let's just go out for coffee." And other guys just think, "Hey, you just don't do that. You just don't do that to a four-star general. There's a certain protocol, a certain procedure, a certain dignity that you need to give to him." Even though they love him, even though they think he's the best, even though they know that he's such a good general, you still don't actually treat him as if he's just one of your buddies, so to speak. And it's the same with God. What's it mean to fear God? It means, another way, reverence. Treating him with dignity. Treat him with the honor that he deserves as God. Standing in awe of God. So when this Solomon has done his research, the one thing he's come to realize is one of the most important things in life is to fear God, to stand in awe of God. But this is not just about a feeling, it's about an action. So the second thing he tells us is to keep his commands. Keep his commands. Well, if you know the Old Testament, all the commandments are summed up for us in the well-known Ten Commandments. It's all summed up there. Everything branches out from the Ten Commandments. But Jesus did something even better for us. He didn't even just recite the Ten Commandments. Remember how he summarized it? He summarized the Ten Commandments under two categories: love God, love others. What's the first and greatest commandment? Love God with all your mind, body, and soul. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second commandment is just like that: love others as you love yourself. To put it another way, what are the two most important things that Solomon has come to realize about life? And that is that we need to love God and love others. To love God and love others. And so, the second point, the most important thing in life is to fear God and keep his commandments, or others, or another way, to love God and to love others. But that leads me to my third point. To fear God and to keep his commands is the whole duty of man. Have a listen to what he says here in verse 13. "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep his commandments. For," note this is the duty of all mankind. This is the duty of all mankind. In other words, it's not that these is the two most important things. This is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Everything that happens, the good and the bad, the dark days, the sunny days, the stormy days, everything. There are only two questions that we need to ponder as we travel through the messiness of life. 2020, 2021, and moving the future, there are only two questions that really matter. And that is, do you fear God? Do you love others? You think about it, as we think about 2020 and 2021. We had our travel plan set. People were planning to go overseas, some to go overseas to travel, some just to go and see relatives overseas. They hadn't seen for years. Then COVID hits, and your travel plans go out the window completely. And worse still, you lose all your money. Or when you do travel overseas, you are stuck there, not just for a few weeks, but for a year or for 2 years, struggling to get a plane back to Sydney. And you ask the question, why? What happened? What did I do wrong? Why is this happening to me? And there are only two questions that this passage tells us. Why is it happening to you? So that you can learn to fear God and keep his commands, so that you can learn to love God and love others. Maybe you're a very entrepreneurial person who wants to start a business, and then again COVID hits and things just bottom out, all your customers go, you lose everything, you go into bankruptcy, and you're asking the same question: where did this all come from? I work my butt out, I made incredible sacrifice, I was honest, I prayed to God, and now I'm bankrupt. Why? Why did this happen? And Ecclesiastes tells us, so that you might learn to fear God and keep his commands. You know, everyone around us is getting married and you're still single. And you think to yourself, what did I do wrong? Why am I still single? Or maybe you've been in a relationship, a long-term relationship, and then suddenly things go foul and your partner walks out on you. And you ask, what did I do wrong? Why did this happen to me? Or you have friends who grow up in a lovely family, but you are growing up in a busted family. You hear news of a child, your child has cancer. That's wrong, Joe, wrong. Because it should be a child, it should be the parents. But now the child gets cancer and you ask, why? What did I do wrong to deserve this? Or you've been busting your guts to study HSC and then you discover that you have slept in and you missed your exam because you forgot to turn the alarm on. Or you've been working so hard and you expected to climb to the top of the ladder, only that when HR comes in, they are giving you a redundancy payout. Or your wedding plans, you plan so much, and then on the day, everything falls foul. For anyone who's thinking about getting married, right? Despite the good plans, everything falls apart. And you ask yourself the question, why? I mean, what plans did you have for 2020 and 2021? What plans were ruined? What relationships fell apart? What bad news did you receive that you never expected? And weren't you asking the question, why did this happen? And the Bible's answer is simply, why did it happen? Because there's only two questions you need to ask. Did you fear God? Did you keep his commands? Did you love God with all your mind, body, soul? Did you actually love others? But maybe none of that describes you, because as far as you're concerned, life is fantastic. Life is going really, really well. You have the best job in the world and you love it. You love your colleagues. You love your manager. You have a great marriage. You found a great partner and a great family. You've just come back from a fantastic holiday. Everything is going well. And you think to yourself, well, this is really what it's all about. And the Bible says, no, it is not what it's all about. Because the most important question, whether you're going through dark times or bright times, is, do you fear God? Do you love him? Do you keep his commands? Do you love others? Because that really is what it's all about. Because remember what he says? To fear God and to keep his commands is the whole duty of man. It all boils down to that. Whatever plans you have laid down for the past can be reduced to two simple questions. Did you fear God? Did you keep his commands? Whatever plans you have for the future can be reduced to two simple questions. Will you fear God? Will you keep his commands? Will you love God? Will you love others? And that wraps up to the fourth point. What God calls us to do is what God is doing in us. One of my favorite New Testament passages, I'm sure it's also with many of us here, is Romans chapter 8, 28 to 30. And look at what he says in verse 28. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And notice what it says there, in all things. You know what the all things means? Not just the good times, but even the bad times. God works in even the bad times, even the bad news. God works in that. For what? For your good. Now, what is that good? Well, that good is according to the purpose which he has called you. So it's not surprising that we are often consumed with seeking God's guidance, because we know that what God has called us to, according to his purpose, is good for us. We know that God has worked all things according to this special will that God has for my life. Is it to get married? Is it to get this job? Is travel over here? What is it? And we're left constantly trying to seek God's will. But God actually tells us what his will is. Because have a look at what he says in verse 29. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. In other words, God is working every minuscule detail of your life, every aspect of your life without any exception, to make you more like Jesus. To make you more like Jesus. It is God's plan for us from the beginning. He chose us to be more like his son. He saved us to be more like his son. And he's working in all things to that we might be more like his son. And when his job in us is complete, we will be like his son. Why? And the simple answer is simply because Jesus is the only man in human history who truly feared God completely and who loved others perfectly. If life is all about fearing God and keeping his commands, if life is all about loving God completely and loving those perfectly, then it's not surprising that he should shape and model us after the one who did it completely. That is Jesus. You see, life is so messy, isn't it? Completely messy. You just have to look back at 2020 and 21. Plans were broken, lives were broken, jobs were lost. The future is uncertain and there's no guarantees. It's not to say that we don't study hard, and it's not to say that we don't hard, or it's not wrong, it's wrong to get married, no. But it's saying that God has a plan for us. And that plan for us in every minute of our life is to make us more and more and more like Jesus. Well, let's come back to our equation here. Proverbs, if you want to understand the world from the point of Proverbs, 1 + 1 = 2. You do the right thing, you get the right outcome. You work hard, you'll get reward. Job tells us, well, that's only half the story. Because there's a lot of things that happen in life that are absolutely wrong. And Ecclesiastes tells us the other half. Well, 1 + 1 + 1 = 2, doesn't it? The other half is that life is so messy, I don't know what to do with it. But when you understand Ecclesiastes chapter 12, it comes to that conclusion, 1 + 1 = Jesus. The silly season is over. The lazy season's here. And looking back over 2020 and 2021, it was a crazy, confusing, mixed up, broken plans type of year. And we ask the question, well, why did all this happen? Well, what does Ecclesiastes tell us? As he looked back over the life, which is not different to what we have seen. Well, he looks back over life and says, the question he wants to put to us is, did you fear God? Did you love others? Did you grow to be more like Jesus? When we go to next year, we might have our plans. We might have our plans to travel, to change jobs, get married, build a business. Don't be surprised if all that falls apart. Be thankful it does work out, but don't be surprised if all that works out, because at the end of the day, as we face next year, there's only three questions we need to think about. How can I fear God? How can I love others? How can I be more like Jesus next year? That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Let me pray. Father, we come to the end of this year. It's been a crazy ride of many ups and downs, of broken plans, broken relationships, tears and laughter, isolation and confusion. Yet, Lord, you call upon, you remind us that the duty of all mankind is simply to fear you and to keep your commands, to love you with all our heart, mind, body, and soul, and to love those as we love ourselves. But above all, you call upon us and you are working in us in all our situations to continue to make us more and more and more like Jesus, the only one who truly loved you and truly loved others. Next year, as we face it with whatever plans we have, we pray that you'll help us to be more and more like Jesus in every area of our life. Amen. I'm going to let's stand up as we